Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And the Rooster, Chris Russell, I appreciate you joining me, my friend. You are a couple days now removed from the Washington football team, emerging with a victory in week one. How shocked were you?
Yeah, hey, Reese. Thanks for having me, as always. I was not shocked at all. Last week on ABC 7 with Scott Abraham and on this radio station, pregame, and on my show on Saturday morning, I picked the Washington football team to not only cover the six, but to win straight up. I thought they had a good matchup with the defensive line against the beat up and battered offensive line of the Eagles. The game went, I don't want to say exactly how I thought. I mean, I didn't think they would win, having to come from 17-0 down. We all know this offense is not built for that, but I wasn't surprised ultimately that they won, Reese. I was surprised how they won, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I can't see falling down 17-0 as being a way that you predicted that was going to happen.
No.
Or you thinking that Carson Wentz was going to completely melt down.
Exactly.
Maybe you called that.
And I was there, you know, and I'm like 17-0. I'm like, oh, God, this has been just the crappiest summer of all time, the crappiest year of all time, and this is just going to be an awful week. And then they got to go deal with Kyler Murray and, you know, all that. I was like, how did I get this so wrong? And then, bam, you know, Carson Wentz, you know, kind of gift-wrapped a couple of throws and pass rush heated up, and they took over.
Now, to your point, how much of that win can we chalk up to some positive steps moving forward? Maybe this team can be more competitive than we thought, or really just a stylistic advantages?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, let's talk about, I guess, some of the things that I think you can take forward, okay? And Ron has basically said this a couple of times, but it's absolutely true. Resiliency. They showed a resiliency, a grit that this organization has not showed anywhere close to enough of over a long time, not just the Jay Gruden era, but really a long time. Usually they start out really well, fresh, kicking ass, taking names all over the place, flying around, three and outs on defense, good pass rush, and then they wilt down the stretch. This was, Reese, just the opposite. They started off terribly, and you can't start off like that a lot in the NFL or you're asking for it. So let's start there, right? But they started off terribly and finished as strong as I've seen this organization finish in a real long time against a still quality opponent, granted one that was missing a lot of its key ingredients, but you know, one that, you know, had a significantly less helter-skelter offseason, has a veteran quarterback and makes the playoffs every year and won a Super Bowl 2.5 years ago. So, you know, I mean, we could sit here and say, well, it was because the offensive line was beat up and no Miles Sanders, and all of that is true. And you tip your cap, obviously, you know, to the Eagles for being up 17-0 before they ran out of gas and they were overwhelmed. But I think the things that you can carry forward are, again, that resiliency, the notion that, hey, you know what, guys, when things aren't going our way, if we just stick to hard work and not giving up and, you know, all the cliche type stuff, but if we also, you know, stick to our basics, and what I mean by that is, down 17 to nothing, Reese, midway through the second quarter, nothing going right on offense and really not much going right on defense, if we're being honest. They kept running the football. They kept, and people laugh at me all the time because, oh, you know, you want 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Oh, look at the numbers. You know, Grant and Danny hate this when I say this. They kept running the football and they chiseled away. And they just kept chiseling away. And eventually it keeps a defense on the field. It wears you out, especially in the first game of the season. It was humid at FedEx Field on Sunday. It wasn't hot. It just wears you out a little bit. And they were able to crease them just enough for a couple of rushing touchdowns by Peyton Barber and that 4th-and-1 conversion that Ron showed a little faith in the boys in a 17-17 game early in the fourth quarter. So to me, you know, there are things you can take and move forward with from this game, not just matchup related.
Now, obviously, the main thing that we were looking to hopefully take and move forward is some flashes from Dwayne Haskins. Now, yeah. I can tell you anecdotally, the returns from my friend group have not been good. What did you see?
So, you know, it was a mixed bag. I mean, let's start with the good, okay? No turnovers, number one. Thought he made, you know, pretty good decisions. All overall, missed some throws. The accuracy was not a problem at Ohio State. It was a problem all year last year. It was a problem all throughout training camp in which he was very often high. Didn't notice that as much on Sunday. As just generally inaccurate and missing some things. But I'll take them at their word that, A, he made all the right decisions. That's what they keep saying. And obviously it didn't result in any turnovers. You know, when things weren't going right, they couldn't do anything. Three and out, can't convert on third down. You know, they found a way to make a couple of plays here and there. I'm thinking about a 20-yard strike to Terry McLaurin. I'm thinking about, you know, Steven Sims climbing the ladder a little bit at the 3 or the 2-yard line. I believe that was right before the Logan Thomas touchdown. It might be before the Peyton Barber touchdown, the first one, where he climbs the ladder, a little bit of a high throw, but comes down with it and sets up a scoring opportunity. I'm thinking about the 19-yard run plus the 5-yard penalty that he took off and went up the Eagles sideline when things broke down. You know, that kind of stuff was good, right? You want to see that. Now, what you need is more explosive plays. They only had 2 plays for that netted them over 20 yards, and they were, you know, 20 and 21 yards, Reese. And then the other thing that you need to see is you need, in addition to obviously a better start in the first half, what you need to see is, you know, if there are opportunities to take advantage of them, even though I think everybody would understand that he's challenged in terms of talent around him. They need to figure out a way to not have to just win games because of their dominant defense. Again, converting on third downs. One thing I love that they did was converting touchdowns instead of settling for field goals after the turnovers. I can't tell you how many times over the years, and I'm going to chart this as soon as I get time, where they would get the ball on the plus side of the field, Reese, meaning on the opponent side of the field after a defensive turnover, and they would just blow it. And sometimes not even get a field goal out of it. Sometimes turnover on downs. So the fact that they were able to get 2 touchdowns, you know, again, Dwayne didn't do all of that by himself, but he led those drives. And then the big one, obviously, is, you know, halftime. He goes in there, he kicks a little ass verbally, right? And I asked him about this today, and I thought he gave a good answer. I said, you know, what, like, did you almost feel like you had to win that game and play reasonably well in the second half for it to validate what you said and what you're becoming all about? And he didn't exactly answer it that way, but he essentially answered it, yeah, I needed to win that game. I needed to show up, and I needed to put up to show them I'm a leader, and it's not just talk, 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 and, you know, all this faith in me. We needed to perform better. I needed to perform better, and we did what we had to do in the second half.
I'm just hoping that they show the kids Rudy, that he had an appropriate speech to pull from at halftime. I don't know that they show the kids the classics these days. He might have pulled from Little Giants. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about all of that, but you know, it's kind of funny, right? Because you know, I wonder if we even hear about that if things don't improve, right? If they don't play well in the second half. And again, play well, reasonably speaking. I mean, he threw for, a 105, you know, 10 of 15. I think
we hear about it the next time that they win. The next time they had something good to say, they'd be like, perhaps. Oh, well, you know, Dwayne kept his head this whole time back in week one.
Yeah, perhaps. You know, that's why I thought it was kind of important to at least get his perspective on, you know, what the impact was, being that they won, you know, and all that. Maybe I'm overthinking all that. I don't know. Here's what I know, right? You still talk to people around the league, and you still get a very negative vibe and a negative flow. Some people are going to say he's never going to mature. Some people think he's never going to be a leader. Some people think this, you know, growth, this dramatic growth is a show. Here's what I would say about that. I was skeptical at first, too, about all of the immaturity issues, the leadership issues, the work ethic. I don't love the whole Instagram, you know, stuff. You know, to me, just I don't need that. But I understand he's 23 years old. That being said, everything that I can measure, everything that I can see, and everything that this coaching staff, which was very jaded about him to begin with and very leery of him to begin with, every little bit of evidence that I could see so far, Reese, through the last 8 months has, not stood out like a sore thumb, but has validated almost what is going on here. A culture change, right? And if you're going to change the culture, let's face it, you can talk the talk and you can change all the people and the harassment policies and the HRs and all. Ultimately, this is a football team and you got to win on the football field. And if you don't have a quarterback that's willing to work and a quarterback that's mature and a quarterback that's a leader and a quarterback that, you know, gets the job done when he needs to, you ain't going to win and you ain't going to change any culture. You could change every other bit of the culture, but ultimately all that matters is that you win on the field, right? And they need Dwayne Haskins to do what he's done so far. Now they need more out of him. They need him to get better. They need him to get more accurate. They need him to stay healthy, but they're getting right now what Jay Gruden and what even Bill Callahan and what the rest of the coaching staff really didn't get until late last year, which was a buy-in from Dwayne.
Now, going to the other side of the football, Ryan Kerrigan, recently crowned NFC Defensive Player of the Week, and I myself tweeted out a picture of Thanos, and it is Infinity Stones, and I said that Ryan Kerrigan was Thanos and Chase Young is the Infinity Stones. Now he has been completely unlocked, that he has other people that the offensive line has to worry about. Do you need to calm me down in any way, or can I be excited to yell about this defensive line for another 15 games?
Well, listen, I think this defensive line is going to be the real deal as long as they don't drop like flies and, you know, lose two or three key guys, you know, Chase among them. In other words, you know, I think they can lose one guy, whoever that one guy might be, and not feel necessarily a tremendous impact because it is the deepest part of the team and the best part as we started off this spot. However, that being said, when you can have a 32-year-old guy who's motivated to prove everybody wrong, to prove that last year was, you know, kind of an off year, a fallacy, whatever you want to. Oh, by the way, oh, think I'm done? Really? Don't want to start me? Really? Think I'm washed up? Think I'm getting traded at the deadline? Want to trade me for a fifth-round pick this off? I'll show all of you bastards, you know, and that's what Ryan Kerrigan did. And now whether that'll last for 16 games, I have no idea. But here's what you know is everybody's going to get a chance to eat on this defensive line because you can't protect everybody. You can't stop everybody. You can't, just shut down everybody. And when Chase Young is as dominant as he was on Sunday, most if not all of that dominance came from the right defensive end spot. I noticed They opened him up on the first series where Philadelphia went through him like a hot knife through butter. On the left defensive end spot, he went over to the right defensive end spot for the second series and immediately started to cook. And I've asked, and Ron Rivera kind of shot me down today. He said, nah, that's not that big of a deal. He plays both. He absolutely plays both. I thought it was a big deal on Sunday. And by the way, when I tweeted that, and I tweeted some video that somebody had put up of Chase Young retweeted it. So, I mean, he must agree, at least for one day, that he was more effective from the right defensive end spot than the left defensive end spot, even though he could play both. And I would also think he might play that left defensive end spot a little bit more and maybe have a little more success this week because the Cardinals have a really good left tackle. So maybe you try and get him a little more of an advantageous matchup on the left defensive end side as opposed to the right defensive end spot this particular week.
All right, moving forward, Rooster, I finish this show. I take my little scooter over to Capital One where I can wage you legally. I don't have to talk to a guy in a dark alley in Southeast anymore. Okay, I want to wager on the home team. Am I taking the Washington football team +7 at -120, or I'm taking them the money line outright to win at +240?
I'm going to take them +7, but I don't think you should take them on the money line. I think they lose a tight one here.
Okay.
So, right. So did I set you up there? Right. So,
yeah, I like
so I'm thinking they lose by a field goal, maybe in heartbreaking fashion. You know, maybe it's a 10-point Arizona lead in, you know, early fourth quarter, and maybe they put together a decent touchdown drive, in the 4-minute offense or whatever, and just come up, short on an onside kick that doesn't go their way or whatever. You know, that type of thing. But I think they cover the 7. I do not think right now they win the game outright. But that's okay. You know, if they go 1-1, I don't know about you. I'm okay with that. I'm not expecting them to go 16-0, and neither should anybody. I want them to be competitive. I want them to show progress. I want them to be resilient. I want them to play hard. I want them to not fold like a cheap suit when things go wrong. And that's exactly what I got, win or lose, on Sunday, is they showed some spunk. And I haven't seen enough of that around here.
Well, I want them to cover the 7. So if they do that, then we can all leave happy, Rooster. When are you on next?
I am on actually in this time slot tomorrow, but only until 8 because of the Thursday night football game between the Brownies and the Bengals, the battle for Ohio. And by the way, people should listen to that game, Reese, tomorrow night on the Fam, because the Browns are hosting the Washington football team in week 3. So that this is a perfect opportunity for us to get a little inside intelligence on the Cleveland Browns tomorrow night for our next game.
Well, you know what? There's plenty of trash still on the street from Tuesday. So I've found out everything I need to know about the Browns. I'm good.
I hear you, brother. Thank you.
All right,
I appreciate
thank you. Chris Russell, the Rooster. Make sure you check him out. Right at this time, actually, no, just before this time, because it's after 8, right at this time slot tomorrow, 106.7 The Fan. I will be back a little earlier than Rooster right after this break, and I want to hear from you, 800-636-1067, Reese Waters, 106.7 The Fan. Thank you guys for rocking with me. I got my man Alan May coming in next to talk a little hockey. Peter Laviolette hired as the new Capitals head coach. And I also want to talk a little Braden Holtby as well. I was just on with Rooster talking about the Washington football team. Shout out to Ryan Kerrigan. He was awarded NFC Defensive Player of the Week for his performance, where he had 2 sacks in the team's win over the Eagles. Crazy thing about that. He moved past Dexter Manley for the franchise's all-time record for 92 sacks now as a member of the Washington football team. But he did it. He only played 22 defensive snaps. This was the first time in his career he was not a starter. Came off the pine, played just 22 snaps, which, by the way, was 32% of the overall plays, and was able to get the 2 sacks and set the record. So shout out to him. Definitely much deserved. He's been certainly holding things down for defensive units that were much less talented than the one he's on. So hopefully he'll be able to thrive from here on out for the remainder of this season. Now, I was going through a little bit of my emotional process and my emotional progress through that game. As I mentioned, I did tweet out at 1:11, just 11 minutes into the game, that optimism had died. Said optimism born at 1 o'clock, died at 1:11. Yeah, I went ahead and tweeted that out. That's how I was feeling at the time. That's how I was feeling at the time. I also was tweeting out, because as we were coming back and we were scoring, what do you yell? You know, I used to yell hail to the Redskins. I used to sing, you know, I used to sing the song. And I'm just like, I don't want to yell, hey, good, you know, hey, Washington football team. Like, what do you say? Don't mute DC? Taxation without representation? Like, what do you yell to rep the DC football team? Like, Sean, what did you say when you were excited about it? And I know the R word came out of your mouth at some point on Sunday. It happened to everybody.
You said Washington. I know it sounds really bland and basic.
You said go Washington? Like you're in a movie and you don't have the rights to use the real team names. Like, go Washington!
Truthfully, I really just say the players' names, whoever made the plays. I don't really say, like, go Washington or go Redskins. It's like, good job, Chase Young.
Good job, good effort.
Great
like
throw,
you sound like an elementary school teacher.
Pretty much. Real basic.
We don't have nothing to sing. I don't know. I like a good song. I don't know. Shout out to Ron Rivera though for going for it, being aggressive. We do need to get a tighter hashtag and a song that I can get behind. It's just not easy to talk trash as a Washington football team fan. And we need to take these opportunities. Look, I talked the most trash early in the season. Matter of fact, I talked the most trash in the preseason because I know which way this is going to go. Okay, I ain't going to be able to talk no trash after like week 5. So let's talk all the trash right now because it's a wrap. Ain't no trash talking in December for us. So we need to fix these issues in the short term. I don't trust that they're going to be relevant over the long haul of the season. I also tweeted out, please tell me I'm not the only DC fan trash talking Deshaun Jackson through the TV. Look, man, I'll be honest. At one time, I gave the D-Generation X, like, thigh bump. We're going to call it a thigh bump? What do you call it? You know what I'm talking about. The chop. The thigh chop.
Yeah. Like, got in trouble so many times at school for doing that.
I actually did that to the TV while I was I was ashamed of myself.
Lost
I was ashamed of myself. My old lady was in the room, and she literally was like, I didn't realize that I was engaged to a 55-year-old dude from Miami. Like, I morphed into, like, a mafia don at that moment. Like, it was weird. It felt good, though.
Would you do it again?
Yeah, because we don't have no trash to talk. It's either that or yell, go Washington. Ah, man. Of course, I tweeted out my Ryan Kerrigan, Chase Young Thanos meme. I'll put that one back out on Twitter. I like that one a lot. Whoever it was, some guy named John Makota said the Eagle season opener and had the Eagle flying through. It looks like a wedding reception and smashing into the glass. The Eagle was okay, though. No animals were harmed in the making of that hilarious Twitter video. And then last but not least, Ron Rivera will never have to pay to cover for a go-go ever again in his life. And, of course, people rightfully hit me up and were like, yo, really, word, after one game? And I was like, yeah, that's why I went with the go-go, because that's the most unrealistic, you know. I really do think they probably would let Ron Rivera into a go-go for free. So, therefore, I can say that with all the confidence in the world. But hopefully that is something that he earns through more than one victory with the Washington football team, and I think we can do that. I'm feeling pretty good. Chris Russell got me pumped. Got me feeling a little chesty, a little pride. I like it. I'm ready to go down to Capital One and blow that money right now. But first, I got to holler at my man, Alan May, about what's going on the ice. We will get into Peter Laviolette's hiring, what's going on with Braden Holtby, Alex Ovechkin, all your Washington Capitals questions. I'm going to get at with NBC Sports Washington's Alan May after the break. But, of course, you guys know the number, 800-636-1067, Reese Waters, 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to 106.7 The Fan. I am Reese Waters. Thank you guys for rocking with me. Happy belated birthday to Tupac, by the way. We missed it by a couple of days, but you know, it's not every day that Sean and I get to rock on these airwaves, and I'm grateful for it. Joining me now for the very first time from NBC Sports Washington, you know him and you love him, talking all things Capitals and Port City Beer, my man Alan May. Alan, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. Now, of course, the big news out of the Capitals camp is the hiring of new head coach Peter Laviolette. But I actually want to start a little bit before that. Do you feel like a coaching change actually needed to be made?
Yeah, I do, because I just felt the last couple of years, even though the team had a winning record, they were too easy to play against, and the games weren't physical enough. There wasn't, you couldn't say that there was a specific style of play that was something that looked like it should be on the ice. And they were winning on talent purely alone, and two first puts in the playoffs, shocked by Carolina a year ago, embarrassed this year by the New York Islanders, and the team just looked listless 2 years in a row, the exact wrong tactics. And I know there was more to it than just those playoff bounces. So, you know what, you've got Ovechkin, you've got Oshie, you've got Backstrom, you've got John Carlson, all players in their 30s who are still elite hockey players. You want to make sure that you get the most out of them. They weren't getting the most out of them when it mattered most, and that's in the playoffs. I feel that they were good enough to still be playing at this point in the playoff season. So they definitely have failed massively in the last 2 years in that regard. And so I definitely believe a change had to be made, and I'm surprised that it didn't happen a little bit sooner, to tell you the truth.
Now, how do you like the hiring of Peter Laviolette?
You know what? I look at this, and it had to be one of two guys, Mike Babcock or Peter Laviolette. And I felt the entire time that it would go to Laviolette for a number of different reasons. There's less controversy. There's no controversy surrounding his name. So you don't have to explain yourself with anything that he's ever done or been accused of doing. And the other is that, you know, he's been to the championship or the finals three times in the National Hockey League. The first time he went there with the Carolina Hurricanes in 2005-06, he won. And a team, he took a team the year before when he took over that team partway through the season that hadn't even made the playoffs. And then you look, he goes to Philadelphia right off the bat, gets him to the finals. And then with the Nashville Predators, he takes him to the finals in his third season there, loses to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who, in my opinion, were unbeatable. So he's done a very good thing, you know, as a coach of the past 18 years. I like what he's been able to do. Can he improve? Can he get better? Can he do things differently? Yes, and that's one of the things that you have to look at when you do get fired. You've got to self-evaluate, reevaluate, and see what you need to do to get your teams over the hump. And I still think that he did a pretty good job in Nashville with the team that he had the last couple of years. They didn't have a quick roster. They didn't have a fast enough team. And I just look at him being able to squeeze 53 and 47 wins out of them as being very impressive.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned his prior stops, because, you know, I've seen enough hirings in the NHL to know that, you know, your prior experience is something that's seen as a good thing, seen as positive things you can bring into this new opportunity. But off the ice, you look at a guy that's had this many stops and is seen as a liability. What is it about hockey where a guy can have this many stops and still you can bring him in with the confidence that he can push us over the edge?
Well, I think it's just a matter of getting the right fit and the things that you've seen out of these guys in the past, the way his teams have played. You know, he didn't have a lot when he was a rookie coach of the New York Islanders, and he still had exciting teams to watch. They played the game with a lot of passion. Carolina, you know, they always played the game fast. They've always played a heavy brand of hockey, and they didn't always max out the salary cap. As a matter of fact, they were usually near the bottom. With the Flyers, you know, the teams were fun to watch. They were fast, and they were actually limited in the personnel that they had. They were kind of top-heavy, and he was able to squeeze it out of them. So I look at this as Laviolette, as a guy that's able to squeeze out whatever he's got with those teams. He adapts to the team that's in front of him and gets a lot out of them. And, you know, hockey is just like baseball. You know, guys bounce around the league, and eventually you get a really good fit. And what you do here over the course of time, over 18 seasons, is the reputation that he has, most importantly with the players. You know, you're already getting it from the general managers and other coaches, but it's the players. And it's everyone who's ever played for him has spoken very well about him and for him and touted him as what a great coach he was. The practices were good. There was an excellent environment. So you take all that into effect. And a lot of times everyone wants to, you know, the hot young rookie coach out of the minor leagues. But still, it's not until you get fired one or two times that you really figure out how to coach in this league. And I think they were lucky that he was available at this time, and they had to act on it before someone else grabbed him.
All right, very, very good point. Now, Braden Holtby is expected to enter free agency. He's a guy that's endeared himself to me as a fan, winning the title, but also a lot of what he's stood for off the ice, I really appreciated. Have we seen his last game in a Caps uniform?
Yeah, unless he throws a curveball to Caps and says, I'm going to come back for a lot less than I deserve. You know, with a flat salary cap this season, they're not going to be able to give into any contract demands with him. And, you know, you've got to worry about the year down the line when Ovechkin is going to need a new contract. And I don't think he's going to take a pay cut or a hometown discount. And after all, I look at him as the guy that built that area around the arena. You know, it wasn't the Wizards that were packing the place. It was all of a sudden in 2008 that the Capitals really started to fill up that area and pack all those bars and restaurants pre and post game and fill the stands in the arena and the trickle down effect. So, you know, I look at Braden, he's done so many great things. He's got to explore free agency. To me, he's the top goaltender out there, but there's way too many free agent goalies this year. There's a flat salary cap. So I don't think the term is going to be there for goaltenders. And I do not think that the big dollars are going to be there, like Sergei Bobrovsky, who got $10 million a year last year with the Florida Panthers and then had a really bad year. So you look at that kind of hurts the market, but I still think he has to do what's best for him financially. No one will ever pay any pro athlete, you know, what they've made in the game, out of the game. And so you've got to take care of it while you can. These guys have put, you know, the better part of the, you know, their learning years into their careers. So, you know, their 20s, their 30s, and Braden will probably be mid-30s when he's done being a pro hockey player. And I think they got to maximize financially while they can.
I want to ask you, we have three teams left right now in the playoffs, and I can't watch anything agnostic. I have to have a rooting interest. Who should I be rooting for as a Capitals fan to win the Stanley Cup?
Well, you know what? I certainly don't want them to cheer for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they've been wealthy for a long time. They've got an embarrassment of riches. And you know what? I don't think they've respected the league enough and what they've done, the other teams that they've been playing. And they've paid a lot of lip service the last few years. The New York Islanders, I guess the only reason, the same reason and the reason I don't want them to win are that, you know, if they do win, then we're going to have to listen to the Barry Trotz thing the rest of our lives. And I love the guy, but I'm not so sure I want to listen to that in the next few years, you know, bury this and bury that. So I would say the Dallas Stars, their goaltender Anton Khudobin, who is their backup goaltender, has come in and right now to me is the most valuable player left in the playoffs. And if he can propel his team to victory, no one had them picked at all. No one was talking about the Dallas Stars. They went through a coaching change this year, not out of performance, but out of something, you know, off the ice. And I just think that they've had a lot of young players that have really stepped up in such a tough time. And I look at them, and I just think they're an underdog story all the way. Everyone, you know, a lot of people in hockey have predicted Tampa. I'd like to see the Dallas Stars go out there and do it.
Thank you so much, Alan Mamie. A little technical difficulties, but really appreciate you for joining the show, sir.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. We'll be back to finish the last segment with Reese Waters. Stay tuned.
Did you catch Gladys Knight and Patti LaBelle?
Most definitely. Had to.
Man, I'm so glad Patti got up and danced. She birthed like 1,000 memes right there. Unbelievable. Everybody's mama left them alone. That was good. We all needed that. That was a win. I was like, at least I know I can get into shenanigans for about 2 hours on a Sunday because my mom ain't going to bother me other than to try and get some technical support because she can't figure out how to stream Instagram Live.
The biggest question was... What was the plates looking like? What were you guys eating while watching this?
Yeah, true that. It was a lot of wigs, a lot of people dressing for church. They ain't been to church in a whole long time. That's that. Before I go, I want to give a shout out to four-time WNBA champion and two-time Olympic gold medalist Maya Moore. If you recall, back in July, Jonathan Irons was released from prison after having his conviction overturned. Moore sacrificed her 2019 and 2020 WNBA seasons to focus on freeing the man who was serving a 50-year sentence for a crime she believed that he didn't commit, and a judge agreed, found enough holes in the case to overturn it. And he was released from prison after spending more than 20 years behind bars. Well, it was announced today that they are married. So that is a beautiful story and the screenplay to a movie. I don't know if the movie was done first or this real life came first, because this absolutely is a movie. The words hero and sacrifice are thrown around a lot, but they definitely apply here. She's one of two players in WNBA history to win the league's regular season MVP, finals MVP, and all-star MVP, and she walked away. Now, of course, we all want to get to a point in our society where that kind of sacrifice isn't necessary, and that's why you're seeing a lot of the protests that you're seeing across the sports landscape. Of course, the NFL returned this past weekend, and as promised, there were league-wide gestures geared towards promoting social justice and healing the racial divide in our country. The organization on its face, now committed to the cause championed by Colin Kaepernick, encouraged players and coaches to find their voice and help them advance our society. What a difference 4 years made. While NFL executives, team owners, and most Americans have seemingly had a change of heart and minds, there are still those who are resistant to change, as we heard Thursday night before the season opener, when the Chiefs and the Texans took the field together, players locking arms in a show of unity, a united front met with a chorus of boos. And who boos a call for togetherness? Only those who oppose healing the wounds from which this country suffers. And yes, those people do exist. But sports have always served as a catalyst for social change in the greater society. It's been athletes, our heroes, that have been bridges. Jack Johnson, Paul Robeson, Billie Jean King, Jackie Robinson, and Pee Wee Reese. The list goes on and on. The list of men and women who've used sport as a platform to unite and advance the culture is long, and thankfully it's growing. And while we have quite a ways to go as a country, the NFL still has a way to go itself. Both Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid are still sitting out right now of a game they should be playing, even as the league uses their images to promote the cause, which, by the way, didn't go lost on them. That is definitely a bit hypocritical. However, bridges are being built. Let's just hope that those bridges are strong and lasting so that we can all walk them together. We saw what happened in week one. We'll see what happens in week two. Now that that's done, one thing that we heard on the way in, ratings are up in the NBA, so I don't expect the NFL to be affected by that whatsoever. Stay tuned for the Big Ten. We'll see exactly when they will resume play. That's both a blessing and a curse if you are a Maryland fan. Following me right now is Tech Talk Live. That starts at 9 p.m. Of course, you can catch me on WSA9 every weekday morning at 6 a.m. On Channel 9. You can also catch me on social media at Reese Waters, R-E-E-S-E-W-A-T-E-R-S. And somebody hit me up and said, do you answer your messages? It depends. You hit me on Twitter, I answer. You hit me on Facebook, 0% chance. Instagram, 50-50. It depends on what kind of mood I'm in. Stay tuned for Tech Talk Live. That is following me at 9 o'clock. I am Reese Waters. This has been 106.7 The Fan. I want to thank my man Sean on the ones and twos. Get at me.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.